So as Jake and I record this, the U.S. has most recently attacked Iran, and things in the world just seem like they're getting crazier and crazier. And today what Jake and I are going to talk about is how can one person, a guy like me, a guy like Jake, a guy or a gal like you, how can we actually make a difference in the world today? How can we make a difference in all that we see, all that's going on, and still lead our family and still do our jobs well and still keep the main thing without ignoring the reality of what's going on all around us. I know that it can feel overwhelming at times and confusing at times. And so that's what Jake and I are here to explore today is what do you do? How do you make a difference in the world? How do you keep moving forward the direction that you know you should go while trying to pay attention and plan for all that's going on around us? So with that, Jake, thanks for being here and let's jump in.
Yeah. Thanks, Zach. You know, I've thought about this a lot and, you know, like you said, with what just happened recently with Iran, you know, that's sort of the thing that I sit here and question, like what as a leader of my home and a leader of my family, can I do about that? You know? And then the next thing you hear is this shooting that happened in Texas. And it's like, now they're connecting it to, he was wearing a sweatshirt that said, something about like, you know, here is Allah or something like that. And, you know, these are the kind of things that I sit here and I question, like as a man who doesn't want to become a politician, but also I don't want to become an internet troll where I'm just arguing with people online. Like, where's the actual spot that I can make some sort of change in this? Like, what's a way that I can affect the result of this? Cause I think the common misconception that I had for a long time, and I think a lot of other people my age have, is like every 4 years you get a vote, and that's, you know, you got to lay in your bed that you build. So yeah, I just feel like there's a different answer than that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I have all the answers by any means, but, the way that I think about it is really just comes down to, there's certain things we can control, certain things we can't control. And so I think that to the degree that we're thinking, critically thinking people, I think it makes sense to engage in some of the conversations and elicit feedback and provide pushback when the time is right, when the circumstance calls for it. I mean, I think that politics, when you really think about it, is just, it's just groups vying for the ability to influence how other groups live. And so when people say, oh, well, I just don't care about politics, I have a really hard time agreeing with that, because the reality is everyone cares about politics. It's just some people don't want to get involved in politics. Maybe they don't, maybe they're afraid to get involved. Maybe they just don't think that there's anything they can do. And those are fair enough. But the reality is that politics affects all of us. Right. And so these political decisions, like in the state of Washington, where I left almost 4 years ago now, they're going to go against their own constitution, and they're going to enact a millionaires income tax this year. And then they're going to go through the Supreme Court. It's going to get challenged, and the liberal Supreme Court's probably going to somehow come up with some justification for why it's OK. And then just like you saw in California, a bunch of the rich people will leave and a bunch of the production will leave with it. And the best allocators of capital in that place will leave. And then, you know, it'll probably take 5 or 10 years before you really actually get to see the fruits of that terrible decision. And all the people that it's supposed to help will suffer. And so I think that it's difficult because, yeah, what are your options? Well, one option is to get involved in politics. But I think as we've seen, it's like, is that really making a difference, right? You know, people are like, oh, well, we're going to vote these people in 2024 and everything's going to change. And so far what I've seen is very little has changed. Right. And so then what do you do? And this goes back to, I think, what we talked about in a recent conversation of, I think the skill that will separate people in the next decade is the ability to understand what to focus on. And so I think the question we're really wrestling with again here is, what do I focus on? Do I focus on all this craziness going on around me? Do I engage in it? Do I participate in it? Do I try and make a difference? Or do I focus on my family? Or do I focus on my career, et cetera? And I think that the answer is, is what it always is you got to focus on the thing that you feel like the Lord is leading you into. And for some people, that might be politics, right? But here's the thing. Like, our first ministry is always to our home. And we see people all the time sacrifice their home life for their political life or for their ministry life or for their business life. And in my mind, the way I look at it is then we failed in our first calling, in our first assignment, which is to care for and lead our families. And so I think that the thing that we should focus on first is, am I doing a good job being a dad? Am I doing a good job being a husband? Am I doing a good job being a provider? Am I doing a good job keeping my home safe, right? And leading my family and leading my kids. And I was thinking about this a couple nights ago. If we hearken back again to this idea of the investor's approach, and you think about, like, if your life is a seed that's sown into eternity, right? It's an investment into eternity. I think one of the things that as it relates to this particular conversation, it's like, Jake, we may never do anything in our lifetime that changes the trajectory of where things are going, except for have kids and raise them to know what's right, to believe in what's right, and to do what's right, because it's always the next generation that's going to change the world, right? We can advocate for that. We can advocate for change now. We can advocate, we can engage in political conversations, and we can build businesses. We can do all those things. But it's like, when you really think about how does the world change, we need to invest into the next generation, right? We need to actually teach, because how have we gotten here? We've gotten here through the indoctrination of prior generations, right? Prior generations have been indoctrinated to believe in things that ultimately lead to destruction instead of flourishing. Like we talked about last time, there's a way that seems right to a man that in the end leads to destruction. And that's what we're bearing the fruit of today. That's the fruit that we're seeing in so many regards today. And I go, man, like, I don't know what I can actually do unless I want to go run for political office. And even then, I don't know if that's going to change anything. That doesn't mean I'm not going to have conversations like this and engage in the conversation, but it makes me think, oh, I need to focus even more on leading my kids so that when they get to this age, hopefully if enough of us are doing that, we start to change the tide.
Yeah, that's interesting. Going back to what you said halfway through there is, understanding what to pay attention to. I know we hammered that pretty hard in a previous video, but, you know, talking about, you know, children right now and talking about your family, like one important part for leading your family well is understanding what to pay attention to, you know, and when it comes down to politics, it feels like that's just one of those areas where it's just like, there's just so much noise. It's like you hear these political speakers that are just, they're either just completely lost their minds talking about, all sorts of different things, or it's just straight up fear mongering of like, they're just like, the more afraid you are, the more they can pump into you. And, you know, I guess from your experience, where have you found like that balance of like what to pay attention to in politics?
Well, I think that, national politics is hard because it's the thing that you, it's like the thing that there's a direct pipeline into your feeds all the time, right? Whether it's social media or if you watch the news, or if you read newspapers, right? But I think honestly, in most cases, the politics that people should pay the most attention to that almost no one pays any attention to is the local politics. Like they structured this country, our founding fathers, in a way that we were meant to care the most about local politics because national politics was not supposed to be that influential. And, you know, unfortunately, we find ourselves in a situation where national politics is insanely influential. And yet it's still not as influential as like your local school board or your local city council or your local county commissioners and even your port authorities, things like that. And so I think this also goes back to our last conversation about leadership. It's, if you really want to make a difference in some of these conversations, it's like, well, how are you leading, right? Are you living your life? Are you leading in a way where people get to judge, is your way working better than this other way, right? And then again, going back to leadership, do you have the courage to take a stand when you feel like a stand is worth taking, right? Like, because I think there are some people who, it's like this, the pendulum that you see everywhere. There are some people who, they obsess over this stuff so much that all they focus on is politics. And if you've watched these people, like somebody like a Candace Owens or even a Tucker Carlson, or I'm sure there's others where it's like they have spent so much time paying attention to this that they almost become insanely pessimistic to where like everything is the end of the world.
Yeah.
And then you have people on the other side of the pendulum who are just like, hey, it's so overwhelming. I'm just not going to pay attention to any of it. And I think like in most instances, the right answer for most people is probably somewhere in the middle, right? Where it's, hey, I'm going to pay attention to the things that directly affect my family. Things like taxation, things like what they're teaching my kids, things like, you know, whatever these big items that are going to affect us are. And I'm going to engage in those where I can. And then outside of that, like, I'm also going to trust that God has a plan, that he is sovereign. And that at the end of the day, yes, I think we are his hands and feet. Like, we have to actually do something, but we don't have control of the outcome. And I think that's the thing, like, so much of it comes down to is our engagement in something or our desire to fight something, is it rooted in fear, right? Because if it is, then probably it's not going to lead to fruit that's the kind of fruit you would want to eat. And so I think because all of us, you know, we have conversations about this kind of stuff around the dinner table, and I think oftentimes we all come away with the same thing, which is, well, what the heck can I do about it? And here's the reality, like, unless people want to stand up and like go out and get shot in the back by the arrows and take the bullets whizzing by their head, you know, metaphorically speaking, in most cases, at least, there's not a lot you can do about it other than go live a life that advocates for the kinds of things that you believe in, as opposed to just talking about them. And see, I think that's the thing, like so much of the conversation is just that, it's just conversation. And it's like, but if all the people having those conversations about what they believe in and what they think is right and what they think is wrong, if they were actually out there doing those things and producing in those ways, then we could actually have a say at the table, right? Because most of politics is just dictated by people who have money, usually running successful businesses, right? Who are basically swaying the political decisions. And so it's like, well, those guys honestly have more control over what's happening than the politicians do.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, just an example, look at our, you know, past couple of years of how heavy of a hand Elon Musk had in, you know, our current presidency, for sure. You know, something I wanted to touch on there quickly is you said a couple of different things there. You said, you know, there's the paying attention to local politics, which, I mean, for me, I'm gotta be on, I'm horrible at, you know, like, I think that's where one area I could definitely be more involved in. And I know you've spent time dealing with local politics in Washington. And I guess one question I had for you there is like, you spent time in that area, which is pretty heavy turmoil in that time that you were there. Like, what kind of results did you see out of actually becoming involved in local politics versus like the other side of the coin that you just said is like having super high success in business and creating leverage out of that instead?
Yeah, that's a good question. I just wrote down as you were asking, to be really honest, my time working in local politics, I think, was mostly fruitless. I mean, I got to share my opinion. I got to hopefully influence some local decisions and decision-making processes. But, you know, the reality is, it's like when the mob wants to do something, the mob's going to do it. And so I wrote down that the way that the way that we can think about this is, you know, there's a law of thermodynamics, I believe, called the law of entropy. Right. And if you really think about it, like all of life is this battle against entropy. And entropy, if you're watching or listening and you don't understand, it's just like, basically, in a closed system, if left to itself, things will naturally over time degrade into disorder, right? So think about like if you just left your yard and you didn't take care of it within a couple of months, right? It's like taking over the whole house. And so the way I think about the political thing is it matters, right? Because it's like entropy. It's going in a direction that's trying to make our lives harder. And so you can fight the entropy by like fighting against the political machine, whether it's local, national, regional, whatever. And there's a time and a place for that. But I think, honestly, the best way to overcome that entropy is to actually do it in our business world, in our career, in our ability to earn a living, in our ability to be flexible and mobile. Because, like, I've moved twice now, you know? And And the reason that I was able to do that is because I've created some value in the marketplace to where I have the financial ability to be a little bit mobile than I would otherwise. And so, because here's the deal, like, I don't know that we're going to outpace the entropy unless something massively changes through the political landscape. Like, look at what's happening with Epstein, and not a single person has been arrested in America. It's like, that is insanity, right? Now, my point is, I can't control the entropy, if you will. I can't control necessarily what's coming up against me, what's pushing against me, inflation and bad laws and all these things. But what I can do is I can focus on getting better myself, creating value in the marketplace myself, being rewarded for the value I create in the marketplace. And then every once in a while, I have to make a judgment. Do I stay here? Do I go? Do I take my ball from this court and go to another court that's more friendly? Or do I stay here and do I fight for this court, right? And so I think that, like, a lot of it is, don't pay no attention to politics, but at the same time, just know that in most cases, your ability to escape the politics that you don't like is going to be dictated by how much attention you didn't pay to the politics, so you could pay attention to creating a life that will allow you to escape the politics if and when necessary, right? And it's like, in doing that thing, because here's my belief, it's just like addiction, right? I've had to deal with some addiction in my family over my lifetime. And what I know is, like, you can't fix the addiction of an addict. Usually the addict has to hit rock bottom. And so here's how I think about this. I look at what's going on in California. I look at what's going on in Washington. I look at what's going on at many of these blue states. And eventually these stupid decisions are going to end in rock bottom. And when they do, people are going to be looking for people who for the longest time have been just kind of banging the drum. This isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. And when they finally get ready to try something else, the people they're going to reach out to are the people who said, this isn't going to work. And they're finally going to have a seat at the table that they should have had all along. And so I just think, like, it's really hard. I wish I had a great answer, but it's like, don't waste your life unless you want to be in the political world fighting about politics. Invest your life in creating a great life so that you can be flexible and mobile if you need to, so that when these people finally realize that what they've been doing is so stupid and they're finally ready to reach out to people who have been telling them it won't work all along, you've done well enough in your life that you have a seat at that table.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think, one question that leads for me is, like, you hear about these things that are happening in these blue states, you know, and not some of them are like, you know, what's going on in Minnesota. Like, we hear about the millions of dollars of Minnesota, and then we're hearing about voter fraud in California, and you're hearing about even Epstein files in DC. And it's like, those sort of things kind of create this idea in your brain that, like, maybe the government is actively working against you in these little areas, right? So I guess the question that I have for you is, like, after you've seen that, you can't close your eyes to it, right? You can't put your blinders onto it. So there's the feeling of, like, do I stay here and fight this uphill battle with these crazy people, or do I move somewhere that has more similar views? Because, like, right there, you just mentioned, you know, being able to have the build the life to have the flexibility to maybe go somewhere that is more aligned with your political views or supports what your mission is, you know. But having seen what's going wrong, and, like, is there just a time where that uphill battle is just too steep?
Yeah, and I think that's where this conversation maybe gets a little bit nuanced, because there's no one-size-fits-all answer, right? I think this is where, like, for me in Washington, I spent 8 or 10 years really trying to advocate politically, locally, at the state level, try and bring some level of what I believe to be, like, common sense and sanity. And I could just watch the trajectory. And so, again, I'm going to go back to the investor's approach. Like, one of the things that makes great investors is the ability to anticipate the future, right? And it doesn't mean that you're always right about the future, but, like, an investor is trying to value future cash flows and figure out what those cash flows are worth today. What can I pay today for what I expect this business or this real estate, piece of real estate or whatever I'm buying to produce over this period that I'm going to hold it? And then what is that worth today? And so what makes a great investor so often is the ability to, with some level of accuracy, predict what's going to happen in the future. Okay. Well, when I look in Washington and I just said, hey, man, I've been doing this for like 8 years. I think I can predict where this is going. And I can sit around and I can wait for it to happen and then hopefully not be the last person out. Or I can just move now to a place where I don't anticipate this kind of trajectory to exist. And it's an investment decision, right? And so like that decision is different for everybody and everybody needs to pray about it and find out where the Lord is leading them. But oftentimes people will say, oh, and I got to be careful because I'm not here to say what God's telling anybody else. But I think oftentimes people don't do it and they say it's God hasn't opened the door yet. And really that's just an excuse for being afraid, right? Because like at the end of the day, I think that it's very infrequent that God says, this is the exact thing that I want you to do. I think most of the time God says, hey, I want you to go do the things you want to do as long as doing them reflects well on my image, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think for most of us, it's when you look at the future in the place that you're at, if you feel like God has put on your heart that you're supposed to stay there and fight and advocate for fixing that place, then by all means, you should do that. But if that's not a specific thing that you feel, then you should look and you should say, hey, I'm an investor. Like I have to predict here or at least try and predict. Is this place going to be a good place for my kids? Is this place going to be a good place for my career? Is this place going to be a good place for my ability to create wealth and to experience freedom? And the reality is like, that's the great thing about how they created America with different states is states compete against each other and cities compete against each other and counties compete against each other. And at some point, like I can remember playing sports, this one coach that we had and everyone hated this coach. And we would walk into the locker room and we would say like, hey man, if every one of us just said, we're not doing this, he would have no power, but like nobody ever had the guts to really do it.
Right.
And so here's the thing. It's like, if people don't have the guts to pick up and move on, and they don't have the skills to pick up and move on and find another job, then the tyrants will just keep doing what the tyrants have always done because the tyrants have all the leverage, right? How do you create leverage to take some of the leverage away from the tyrants? Well, you create skills, you create businesses, you create wealth machines because all of their tyranny, like think about socialists. Socialists require the profits of a capitalist to make what they think socialism is work. Mm-hmm. Right. You get rid of all the capitalism and socialism fails to work. And so it's like the way that we fight against that, again, overcoming the entropy of that system is go create value in the marketplace. But at the same time, like you have to look into the future a little bit and see like, where's the trajectory going? And do I want to sit here? It's like, do you want to buy a business that you think, you know, a stock, do you want to buy stock in a business that you think over the next 10 years is going to dwindle to barely like dying on the vine? Probably not. You want to buy a stock that you think in 10 years, the company's going to be 10 times bigger. Well, it's like, you got to think about where you're living in a very similar manner.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I know for you, it's very similar, but for my wife and I, we moved from our first place, sort of out of fear. You know, fear of what the place was becoming when we were living there, fear of what might happen if we stayed there, it was like a 2-week, bam, we just made the decision to go. A lot of it was, you know, logical decision for us, but there was definitely some fear factor in that, and looking back on it, I think I would challenge even the people listening of like, you know, making these moves. Out of all of the things that you're saying, you know, of like, does this specific state or county or whatever, you know, really fit my overall views, instead of, you know, making that decision out of fear, like, oh, what might happen if I stay here? And like, in that sort of piece of it, maybe you can speak to a little bit better than that. And, you know, this might be a bigger conversation of making decisions out of fear, but, you know, thinking about how politics are structured right now, it just feels like every single time you go to look at something on the news, there's going to be something that you could be afraid about happening. It's like, oh, you hear all these things going on in China, you hear everything going on in Iran, you hear all this other stuff. And it's just like, it feels like the walls are closing in on you, you know? And it's like, there's something in there that's just like, I know the Bible talks about it all the time. Do not be afraid. Do not fear, all of these things. And it says it over and over and over again. And I think like, That's like a biggest thing for me when I think about our next move going down to Florida. It's just like, do not be afraid.
Yeah, because when you're afraid, your brain shuts off the ability to be creative, right? And so if you think about like every problem in order to solve requires some level of creativity. And the one thing that will kill the creativity required to solve the problem that you are afraid of is the fear, right? And so when you think about if you're living your life constantly motivated by fear, then you're probably going to feel like you're running around really frantic. And the reason that you're running around feeling really frantic is because the ability to actually operate in the creative part of your brain is basically like turned off. Whereas if you look at every problem that you would normally be afraid of as an interesting challenge or puzzle to figure out, all of a sudden, right, and you start asking yourself questions, well, how could I solve this puzzle? What's one way I could solve this particular problem or make progress to solving this problem? And you start asking your Excuse me, you start asking yourself questions, your brain can't ignore a question. Your brain will start to go into creative mode for how to solve the problem. Whereas when you just become afraid, your brain doesn't ask questions. It just freaks out. It goes into fight or flight mode, right? And that's why a lot of people get frozen. They don't do anything. They say, I hate this place. I got to move. I got to, but it becomes so fear driven that they literally can't like get creative about how to overcome the problem. And so they just stay frozen. And so I think if you're considering moving, like for us, when we moved from Montana to Florida, we liked Montana. Montana was a nice place, a pretty reasonable political climate. But Montana had a 7% state income tax. And it's like, hey, I just did the math. I looked at what I was paying just in the few years that I was there paying income tax. And I went, wow, if I would have just taken that money and put it into investment accounts for my children, like within the 3 years, if I would have just let it run for like 20 years, they would basically not have to do much. And I just go, so it wasn't a fear thing. It wasn't, and that wasn't the only reason we moved. But you just start like, again, you think like an investor. And I looked at it and I go, okay, I could live in the sunshine. I could live in a state that's even more free. I could live in a state that has even lower tax burden. And you start to stack, what does all this mean for my actual life and for the future of my family? And for me, that was a pretty easy decision, but it wasn't motivated by fear, right? It was motivated by me thinking about where do I want to go? What are my goals? What are the roadblocks in the way? And then what solutions and what things can I do to come up with ways to achieve the goals and resolve the problems? And one of the problems was like, I don't like paying this much income tax. And here's why, not because I don't want to pay the taxes, which I don't, but because like I can allocate this money better. I can allocate this money towards my children's future and my grandchildren's future so that they're not starting from zero like I did. They're starting from, step one or step two. And so I don't know why I said all that, but I just think that like the more that I would have been obsessing over politics, the less I could have been thinking about those kinds of things. And it doesn't mean that I don't care about politics. I do. And maybe someday I'll get involved in politics. I'm not sure. But like politics is downstream from the culture that you believe in, from the belief system that you have, from the things that you think are right or wrong. And so it's like, spend more time developing and honing in. What do you believe? Why do you believe it? What does the fruit of your life prove that it's true? Because then if you decide you want to go into politics, you'll have a platform to stand on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think maybe we could wrap it up with this, but one common misconception I feel like I hear oftentimes is like this idea of how one man can't make a difference. And I would, sometimes I would agree to that point and the way it feels. It feels like one man can't make a difference, but you look at historical data and it's like that is just the complete opposite of like one man most often than not can make a difference and will make a difference. It starts with one man, right? And so I think what you're talking about right now too is like, don't just start diving into the big picture of the big like the big fish of the politics. It's like you start with yourself, and then you start with your family, and you work with your family, and you lead your family, and then it may lead to your community, and then it may lead to your church or something, and then it goes to your county, and then it goes to your state, and it's like these things can cultivate into something if you're truly genuinely passionate about the political idea you're talking about, but. Like like you're saying, it's like the leverage of that comes from the roots and where you're rooted in. It comes from what you're doing with yourself and with your family and your small communities.
Yeah. And I think, you know, going back to what we talked about last time, this idea of like, if you want to be a great leader, you have to start by being a great follower. And I think the person to follow is Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. And so you think about like, if I want to get involved in this political game, if I want to make a difference in the political world, it's like, well, you better be performing for an audience of one. Because if you really think about, like, think about Donald Trump, at least half the world, I don't know if it's the world, but let's say at least half of the developed world hates the guy's guts. Mm. And the other half or so, you know, they like him or they love him or they'll tolerate him, right? And you go like, hey, if you really think you want to make a difference, if alongside of that is you want everyone to like you, you will never make a difference. You will feel miserable all the time because those two things are at odds with each other. So I think that here's the reality. One man absolutely can make a difference and one man does make a difference. But only when that one man or that one woman isn't trying to please everybody, right? And so here's the question. The question is like, well, then how do you know if what you're advocating for is actually good? Because there's a lot of narcissistic people who don't care what people think, and what they're advocating for leads to destruction. And they have blinders on. They're not willing to listen. They're not willing to change. They're not willing to grow. They're not willing to mature. That's like narcissism. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is, are you following the leader in such a way that then you can go out and advocate for the kinds of things that the leader says would lead to our human flourishing, to our human thriving, no matter, and not even no matter, understanding that and embracing the idea that you will face persecution, you will face ridicule, you will face people that hate you, that want to kill you, you will face all of those things. And this is the thing, like most people don't get in their life what they want because they're not willing to pay the price that it takes to get it. So listen, if you really want to make a difference, you really want to make a difference in the political world, well, like, then go do it. But just know that you're going to pay a really high price. People are going to hate your guts. They're probably going to show up at your house and picket. They're going to say horrible things about you on the internet. But if you care more about the mission that you think that you're on, if you care more about the political reality and the social reality of what you're doing, then the price is worth it. Right. And that's the thing. I think at the end of the day, most people don't get what they want in life because they actually don't know what they want. They think they want this certain outcome, but they kind of believe and they kind of know that to get that outcome, they might have to go through this pain. And they're like, I just don't actually want it that bad. Right. And so the reason that like if you surveyed the 8 billion people in the world, let's say that 1,000 of them are going to be like household names in their area, right? Like there's going to be 1,000 or maybe it's 10,000 people out of 8 billion who swaths of the world know. And it's because like those 10,000 people or those 1,000 people were just simply willing to do things that most everybody else wasn't willing to do. And they were willing to endure things that most people simply weren't willing to endure. And so I just say like, hey, if you want to do it, right? But go in with eyes wide open. And again, start, like you said, start in your home. If you can't lead your home, if you can't make a difference in your home, if the things that you or I talk about that we believe in aren't evident and clear and working in our home, we probably shouldn't be trying to convince everybody else of them, right? So like, let's do it in our home. Let's do it in our community. And then from there, if it's magnetic, right, the leadership part takes care of itself like we talked about last time. So that's what I think.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think, you know, and people analyzing, you know, how, because to step out in this political space, you have to be a pretty strong leader. And like we talked about in the last video, to be a strong leader, reverberating what you said, to be a strong leader, you have to be a strong follower. And, you know, from personal experience for me, I spent most of my life not believing in anything. And then about 2 years ago, I decided like, man, that's just not the life I want to live. And I chose to follow Jesus. And ever since then, it's like that sort of feeling has given me a sort of spine that I never had in like standing upright and taking hits that maybe I couldn't have taken before, taking the arrows in the back, taking the bullets flying by my head, because it's like I got something else backing me up, you know? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'll leave it at that. That's my point of view, but
it's awesome. Well, appreciate you being here. If you're still here 35 minutes later, listening to Jake and I talk about politics and leadership. If you liked the video, we'd love it if you'd share it with a friend, somebody you think could benefit from it. I'd love to hear what you think about it in the comments as well. And if you like these conversations that Jake and I are having, we'd love if you'd subscribe to the channel, whether you're listening to this on YouTube or maybe Apple or Spotify, wherever it is. And we'll see you next time.